Hello and welcome to episode 514 of Fergo on the Brick. I'm that bloke from Rugby League Project, Andrew Ferguson. You can find me on Twitter at AndrewRLP. And joining me as always is the glorious League Freak. You can also find on Twitter at League Freak. How you going there, mate?
I'm going well, Andrew. How are you and how are our listeners?
I've spoken to all of our listeners.
Yeah.
And in doing so, I just asked them, how are you? Mm-hmm. Just so I could answer this question on the start of the podcast. Mm-hmm. But it did mean that I didn't get to watch any footy this weekend. But every single one of them said good. One of them did say, how did you find me?
Okay.
I'm not going to reveal that information.
No, it's none of their business.
No, but I know where you live, Carsten.
Exactly.
Yeah, somewhere in Europe.
The Eagle's Nest.
Yeah, I'm not going to say anything further. Just coast on in and we'll go to the next part. Round one kicked off again.
Yeah, it's kind of weird having, like, I don't mind having a split round for the first round of the season, but it is a little bit weird when you kind of get a taste of it in two games and then it feels like you have the real first round. But it worked out all right. Like, it's something we'll get used to more and more, I think, as time goes on, because I think we'll get many more split rounds like this.
Yeah, I think the deal with Las Vegas was over 5 years, wasn't it? So it's probably going to happen for the next four more seasons, I assume.
Yeah. So I thought it was fine. It worked out all right. And, like, we had footy over every single game of the weekend. That's the important thing for me. Like, as long as you've got a bit of footy to watch every day and there's no sort of days missing.
Yeah. I think the crazy thing, though, was there only one or two games in Sydney and one in Brisbane?
I honestly didn't pay any attention to that because, like, I just, like, I know it's something that the media focused on a little bit. So let me think. There was the Parramatta game, and then there was the game with the Dolphins and Cowboys. So yeah, but look, there was a game on the Gold Coast.
There was one game in Sydney, one game in Brisbane, one on the Gold Coast, Melbourne, Auckland, Newcastle.
Like, that's what we get. We got a national competition. Like,
yeah. It's everywhere.
Yeah, it's not a problem, really.
It's pretty crazy to think that in the first week of the NRL, we had more games played in Las Vegas than we did in Sydney.
That is pretty funny. That is pretty funny.
Some pretty awesome crowds, too, during the week. Obviously, the Titans-Dragons game didn't draw that huge crowd.
Mm-hmm.
No surprise there. But every other game, over 20,000.
Yeah, well, like, I mean, I watched the games this weekend and some of the thoughts I had out of them, that, look, the Knights started off really well against the Raiders but just fell apart, and the Raiders sort of just swamped them over the rest of the game. And, yeah, it's been fantastic to see all the huge crowds. The Warriors crowd, I believe, was a sellout, and their next game is going to be a sellout in Christchurch, which is awesome news for them. They look like they were going to put 40 on the Sharks by halftime, and they had all the field position, all the possession and everything, and they got that great start, and then they just couldn't finish it off. They didn't put enough points on the board, and the Sharks made them pay for it. And it was a really good effort to sort of stick with it so early in the season and come away with the win for the Sharks. That was 16 points to 12. And then we saw the Storm versus Panthers, where the first half was, it almost felt like where the football, the ball was very slippery for whatever reason. And then in the second half, it was like watching finals footy. I don't think I've ever seen a team defend like the Storm did, especially in round one, but definitely in the first part of the season. The Panthers threw everything at them. They had all the possession, all the field position, and couldn't even get a point on the board. So that was awesome for the Storm. And I think it really stamped the Storm as one of the top three teams definitely in the competition.
Hang on. I thought we wrote them off.
The Storm?
Yeah.
We did write them off.
Oh, good. That's good. Don't worry about it. It's just a blip on the map.
Yeah. The Panthers' clunky attack. I don't know how many times. It's really weird how many times we've talked about their clunky attack and they've won three straight premierships.
Yeah.
Like, it's a mind fuck, really.
Like, I do have an interesting stat, though.
Okay.
Over the last decade, Penrith have been held to nil just three times, and in every one of those times, it was against Melbourne.
That's pretty crazy.
The last team to keep the Panthers to nil that wasn't Melbourne was the Cowboys in round 5, 2013.
Wow, that's a long time ago. And the, also, the Storm didn't have Munster, and they didn't have Big Soffa. So, like, that was such a good win by them. It was a really, really good win. And, man, it was a good game. I really enjoyed it. Then we had the Eels. They basically... Look, the Bulldogs, they beat them 26 points to 8. The scoreline flattered the Bulldogs a little bit.
The training run.
Yeah. They need a halfback. The Bulldogs don't have a halfback. And I think they need to bring Sexton into the side and just say, look, you're the halfback. He looked promising for the Gold Coast Titans. The Bulldogs were lucky enough to get him. I just think they've got to go with him for the whole season and say, like, let's see what we've really got here.
So you're saying that they missed Kyle Flanagan?
No one ever misses Kyle Flanagan. We worked that out fucking three teams ago for Kyle Flanagan. The only place he could get a start this year was with his dad's team. And he'll wear that fucking welcome thin. So, yeah, and look, the Eels looked great. I'm not taking anything away from the Eels at all. They looked really good. There was a little bit of a groin injury to, what's his face? Oh, man, I've forgotten his name already. Halfback for the Eels.
Oh, Moses.
Yeah, he had a groin injury, but he should be all right for this coming.
Groin?
Yeah, yeah.
Right, okay.
He pulled his groin.
I bet he did.
The Dragons versus Titans game, I started watching it, and then I couldn't go through with it. And... I was watching it, I think I was 20 minutes in, and I went away to feed the dogs, and I come back, and the Dragons had run away with the game somehow. It was just one of those typical Titans displays. And look, good to the Dragons. Like, they did it. They got a win, first game of the season. But what a fucking C-grade club the Titans are, hey. Like, they've got good players at that team. It doesn't matter how many players they go through. They've got this... fucking nice stadium. They can't feel it because Gold Coast people know what to expect out of the Gold Coast team. And it's just pathetic. It's gone on for too long. And I just don't want to watch any Titans games this year. Like, who gives a fuck now? I'm just done with the Titans.
I think they need to embrace everything that is Gold Coast about that place and completely name the stadium the Christopher Skase Stadium. Lots of money floats around the place. You don't know if it's legit or real or where it come from.
Mm.
And lots of hollow promises.
Mm-hmm.
And no foundation.
Yeah, it's just like how long do they want to be this club for? Because this club is just a waste of everyone's time.
Every year we go through this same drama with them. You go, there's a lot of decent players in there, but they do the West Tigers thing, and they buy players that are available, so they're buying players that they need.
Yeah.
And they've spent the amount of money they've put into part of their forward pack is ridiculous. And I mean, let's go. Can you name me half of the people that played in their back line, including their halves?
What, for this last game?
Yeah.
Well, I probably could, but like it is a revolving door at the
club.
How
many of them would walk into any other side? I wouldn't even say half of them would walk into the West Tigers side.
Yeah.
And the West Tigers don't have great backs either.
Yeah, it'd be a stretch. And the other thing is too, like when your big thing going into the year is, oh, we'll be really good with Kieran Foran guiding us around the field. Oh, he's injured first round. Like, shock horror.
Yeah, so, and with that, if he's not there, I mean, I don't even care if he is there. If he is there, why is Brimson not at 6?
I don't know.
He's not built like a Jack Whiten or a Latrell Mitchell, so you can play him at centre. He doesn't have that physique, but he does have the ball-playing ability and the skills to be a legitimately handy 6. So why are they parking him at centre and having a rookie at 6? I don't get it.
I don't get it either. It makes no sense. I just can't take him seriously anymore. I tried. I've had a lot of patience with them, and now I just don't give a fuck about the Titans. I've just seen too many games where they're in it. Oh, they're down by 24 points all of a sudden, and I'm just not going to do it anymore. And I'm about 8 years behind fucking people on the Gold Coast in that regard. Like, they've given up on the Titans, and I understand completely.
Yeah, well, they kind of gave up on them after about two seasons.
It's no wonder. They've been doing this same shit since that time.
Yeah.
Like, the last time they were consistent, Scott Prince was their halfback.
I mean, you can say the same thing about the West Tigers.
Yeah, you can, actually. That's pretty funny.
Bring back
That's
Princey.
Fun and sad.
Oh, but nah, it's... They've become a meme of themselves.
They have. In the last game, the Cowboys got a smashing win over the Dolphins, 43 points to 18. I said on Twitter, like, it's never a good sign when you train for 6 months and then your first proper competition game of the season, you get absolutely whacked. The Cowboys did it pretty easy. It wasn't like they were on fire or anything. So
the thing that gets me about that too is that the Dolphins forward pack, it's not shit.
It's not, but there are a few older players in it. And I just wonder if, like, for old forwards in particular, it ends quickly. And I just wonder if that's where we're at with some of these players. So we'll see if they can bounce back, but it just wasn't a good sign, I didn't think.
No. The Sharks one for me was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I did catch bits and pieces of the two Friday games.
Mm-hmm.
For all of the criticism they copped last year about their failure to perform against top clubs,
mm-hmm.
I think they put out a genuine statement with that performance there, because they withheld a lot of pressure in that first half.
Yeah, yeah.
Stayed composed, because last year what they would do when they were chasing points was completely forget all of their structures, all of their plans, all their processes, and just play panic football and hope that it worked, and it never did. And this time, they stayed calm, they stuck to their routine, they stuck to their systems, and they ground out a win. And I think it was a rather impressive performance by them. And the thing now for them is that they have to be able to make sure that every time they come up against a top eight side, they have to perform like this is the measuring stick. Like, that's now your minimum. You need to be this as a minimum against the top sides, but try and be better than that every time. If they want to be taken seriously as a genuine contender. Because there's only four teams every year, if we're honest, that are genuine contenders. The rest is just there as filler in the finals.
Yeah, especially over the last couple of years, it's felt that way, definitely. Like, I mean, we've had seasons where a team will be seventh or eighth and they've come into the finals like in really, really good form, or maybe sixth, you know. But it feels like the last couple of years, if you're in that 5 to 8 position, you're just making up the numbers.
Yeah.
So, and the Sharks have been one of those teams basically for that time. I tell you what, the Warriors though, they did everything you possibly could to let the Sharks get back into the contest and then win it. And like, it was very disappointing, because their first 20 minutes, they looked like just a team on fire. And you were like, man, if this is what the Warriors are going to do this year, they're going to be a tough team to beat. And then it just all fell apart so quickly, unfortunately. But,
it's like they wore themselves out in attack.
It is a little bit. And the mistakes they made were silly ones. And it all fell apart so quickly. And, you know, but to give it to the Cronulla Sharks, they did stick with it. It would have been really easy to roll over and die, and they didn't. And they did grind out that win. I just wonder if they'll be able to do that against a team that gets a good start but doesn't completely collapse, because that's what it took. That's what it took for them to get back in the game. But we'll see. That's the cool thing about the NRL. They play the games, so we find out what these teams are actually made of. It's great.
Well, they're going to get a big test this weekend because they play the the Bulldogs. It's okay, because the week after they'll get a they're playing the Tigers.
Well, look, they start the season with 3 wins. That'll be a bloody good start for them.
And then a bye in round 5.
Oh, there you go.
And they've got Canberra in round 4. Dude, that could be top of the table by round 5.
Yeah. Look, Canberra fans were really excited about their game against Newcastle. I think they're getting a little bit ahead of themselves. I thought Newcastle was, at times early on, that game was really good, and then it sort of started to descend a little bit.
They're such a hard team to gauge.
They really are, but I didn't see anything really amazing out of Canberra, put it that way.
No. So, I don't know what's going on there. I'm curious as to how Danny Levi's come from nowhere to be the starting hooker there ahead of Tom Starling.
Yeah, I mean, he's such a journeyman. I was actually, because at one point they were talking about all the clubs he'd been at, and it's been like over here and over in England and stuff, and I was thinking, like, what is it like for him to start a season at a new team? And because he would never have felt like he had a home club. It'd just be, this is the place he's playing at the moment. And it just must be such a different prospect going into a year with that sort of journey through your rugby league career. Because a lot of us sort of think of the one club players or the players that were at one club for a long time and then moved to another club. And that's, you know, that's maybe all she wrote. But he's been all over the place. And he's done really well to keep getting a job, which is, I mean, that's half the battle for a player in his position. He's a handy player, but...
Oh, absolutely. He's not knocking him. He's the thing you'll find with him, though, and the reason why, I think what's happened is the game has changed to suit his style, because he is very much a defensive hooker. So he's not going to be doing an awful lot of creativity, but... He's going to be really, really good at not just tackling, but keeping the defensive line intact in the middle of the field. And I think that's probably a reason why, because the Knights' attack at the tail end of last year was pretty bloody strong. So that might have been a tactic that Ricky Stewart went with, to try and just shore up that middle defensive line. And hey, it looks like it worked. But they're going to need... They're going to need to do a bit more. There was a lot of sort of random team selections that went on during the first round, probably due to, you know, trying to handle the warmer temperatures and stuff like that, given we started pretty early in the month and March has felt like an extension of summer so much, especially down here.
Yeah, it has been here. Like, I think especially if the current temperatures go into this next round of footy, I mean, it's been really hot in Sydney, so we'll find out. We've got some good games this weekend coming up too. I'm really looking forward to the Penrith versus Parramatta battle. You know, how many premiers have started this season 0-2?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Yeah.
If we had a stats person.
I know that's one of those ones you kind of got to look up ahead of time, but
yeah.
You know what? If they started 0-2, I don't think anybody would be willing to write off the Panthers. At this point, if you write off the Panthers, you're just silly considering what the things that they've done. So yeah,
it's way too early. Even if they lost the first 3 or 4 games, it's way too early to write them off.
Yeah, yeah.
If they lose the first 15 games, I'll probably write them off then.
I wonder how many games would it take before you write them off? I would say...
If you get to the point where you're going to lose more games than you win, then I think that's when you've got to start going, you know. Even if you still manage to scrape into the finals, because a few teams have made the finals with more losses than wins.
Yeah.
But they make no impact whatsoever on the finals landscape. So that's basically been written off anyway. So yeah, if you get to that point where you've got, I'm going to say if you've got 10 losses, right? If you've got 10 losses before the end of the regular season, done.
What if the Panthers started off losing their first six games?
Yeah, I don't think you'd write them off.
Yeah, I'd be really worried, but I wouldn't write them off.
Because Penrith too are a team that could win their next 18 straight.
Well, that's the thing about it. Like, they might only lose two more games for the rest of the year and be in the top four.
Yeah.
So that's the thing about them. They're such a crazy team, aren't they? Like everything that we've learned over a lifetime about rugby league, you kind of have to throw out the window with them. It's really strange.
And we did see a comment on social media recently from some random radio station trying to be some big shot radio station saying, are the Panthers playing a boring style of footy?
Oh, I saw that. That was hilarious.
And the answer is, who gives a fuck what style of footy you play if you win three straight premierships in a row?
Well, I mean, have we ever seen a more exciting game than the second last competition game they played, which was the grand final?
Exactly. But I mean, if exciting football was what was the measuring stick, then the Tigers would have won four premierships by now.
They would have, yeah. Yeah.
Is that right? Of course it's not fucking right. Because there's more to football than just being, you know, entertaining to watch. There's the other side of the field, and that is being defensively strong, which is, as we've found out, more important than being flashy.
And I guess the thing is, too, like, when the Panthers are on, they're a horror show to try and stop. They throw the ball around, they punch through the line, they attack you from literally every single place on the field. And yeah, when I saw that comment put out by that radio station in Sydney, which no one fucking listens to, like, you could go out in your street right now and just yell, and you're going to have a greater audience than they have.
This is true. This is the thing. I do liken the way the Panthers play. Quite similar to an actual cat when it's caught a mouse.
In what way?
They just play with their food. Like, they could just crush it and destroy it and completely annihilate the thing. They go, nah, run around for a little bit. I'll crush you a little bit more. Run around, yeah, I'll crush you a little bit more. You never see them anymore. Just go, you know, today we're just going to put our foot on their neck and fucking annihilate them. They don't go out there with the intention of racking up a big cricket score. They go out there with the intention of keeping their opposition to the lowest possible score they can.
Mm-hmm.
That's their goal. If their goal was to be entertaining and try and rack up points, they could do that quite comfortably. But that's not the style that they're coached to or the way they like to play the game. They like to make their teams, their opposition sides, struggle and work and work and work for every single meter and every single point. That's what they do. And then when the time's right, well, we'll just score a try now. And we'll just put another one on there just to get them comfortable in front. And then we'll just – they play with their food. That's what they do.
Yeah,
and
they've got this different sort of outlook on what domination is in a footy game, isn't it? It's like for them, domination is – complete domination is like – we've got 40 on the board, but you can't get out of your 20-meter line. And that, to them, is what they value more than hitting 50.
Exactly right. And that's why you see Penrith haven't racked up too many huge scores.
Mm.
It's also why you see that they are historically one of the best defensive teams we've had in the last 40 or 50 years, comfortably.
Yeah, and it's interesting too because, I mean, we've seen that when the whirlwind starts with the Panthers, like – and they've been at their best. Like, nobody can go with them. Absolutely no one. And we saw it in the start of that grand final against Parramatta a couple of years ago. We saw it towards the end of the game against the Broncos. And, I mean, if you don't find that type of footy exciting, I don't know what to say to you. But as I said, like, if I was a radio station that no one listened to, I'd get to a point where I was like, let's just say some dumb shit and hopefully some people start hate listening to us. That's where they're at.
Yeah. Now, before we go too much further, I just want to say, Penrith, they're sitting 11th on the ladder at the moment. It's got to be the lowest they've been in quite a while.
Yeah, it would be.
West Tigers are 9th.
Nice. So they're above Penrith. How many weeks do you think that will last?
That they're ahead of Penrith or they're in 9th?
No, that they're ahead of Penrith.
Oh, no, that's done now.
That's it.
Yeah, we've only got to do it once. We can sit there and just point to that. We'll take a screenshot of that ladder right now. And in the most saltiest, bitterest way possible, we'll just send this to every Panthers fan all the time. Every time Penrith beats us by 700 points, just going, oh, remember the time we were ahead of you on the ladder?
Seriously, that wouldn't even make the top 5 of the pettiest shit that some NRL fans have done to Panthers fans who are like just bewildered at this point. I actually saw an article, and it was about Bryce Cartwright on the Fox Sports website, and it was like Bryce Cartwright takes a dig at his former team ahead of their grudge match, and I'm like, oh, what's he said? Like, there was really, because the Panthers didn't do anything to Bryce Cartwright, you know, so. I had a read of it, and Bryce Cartwright was talking about how he's 29 now and he's finally sort of getting what it means to be a first-grade footballer, which I was like, geez, man, you're leaving it late. And then he's talking about how Brad Arthur reminds him a lot of his dad and he really responds to him. And he said the only thing you could say that was any sort of anything was that he wished that he could have had a coach like that when he first came into first grade. And he first came into first grade with the Panthers. And but I'm reading it. I'm like, where's the dig he really had towards the Panthers?
Well, he didn't say anything nice about Penrith.
Exactly.
He didn't say anything bad either, but he didn't say anything nice. So that means that by virtue, that's a dig.
Yeah, it was very strange. I was waiting for the dig and I'm like, man.
You know, it'd be funny. And what would be more typical of Fox Sports is if they write that article.
Yeah.
Cartwright has a dig at his former club ahead of upcoming grudge match. And then you find out he's just said, man, I'm so glad I left the Titans. That was so fucked. Oh, I see what you did there. Right. Yeah.
Well, he had like a really long stint at the Gold Coast before he even got to the Eels. Like it's one of those things where you kind of watch Bryce Cartwright play and he is playing very well this season. It's great to see, but you know, it's not like you look at him and go like, oh, former Panther. It's like that was a fairly long time ago now.
Yeah, that's right. A long time ago.
Yeah.
Can we just move on?
Yeah. Like he would be a senior Panthers player if he was in the Panthers side. It's very strange the way that the media tries to make narratives. And then you read the articles and you're like, oh, nothing's been said here. It's like when you'll see an article I'll post and it'll have a player as the photo for the article and the headline will read like, they're an absolute disgrace. And you're like, oh, what's this? You know, someone's really going off at another team. And then you read it and it's like, one of our employees said this to another employee during one of our panel shows. It's like, oh, that doesn't matter. That, you know, that's bullshit.
Speaking of the media's mad approach.
Yes.
What we're seeing at the moment this week, and yeah, this is going to be a West Tigers thing, but unlike in the past, I'm not angry, especially not the Tigers anyway, because what's happened is, because we've got rid of all of the shitheads, I was testing my brain for a word that wasn't shitheads, and nothing else more apt could come to mind. So I just went with shitheads.
Yep, yeah.
Now that they're gone, all the leaks out of the club have gone. And so
that's interesting.
The journos are getting no talk out of the West Tigers at all. And what do they do when they don't get any leaks? They attack the club. So, and how do you know they've attacked them? Okay, this is the crazy thing. Some unknown hack journo, what's his name? Dean Ritchie.
He's the worst.
Yeah. He's, I won't go. Yeah, he's just a fucking idiot. We'll put it like that. Again, I couldn't think of anything other to describe him. That just seemed the most apt thing possible. He's criticized the Benji Marshall coaching method before Benji's even coached a game. Bearing in mind that Dean Ritchie has never watched a game, let alone coached one.
Yeah.
How does this clown have a platform?
I don't know. It's really weird how in the mainstream media, the people that are talking about the game are also fucking old. They've all been around for so long, and none of them, their voices aren't respected at all.
No. So I found another term that the journos use, because I think they've decided to move away from the pub test.
Yeah, because they're all a bunch of alcoholics, and it started seeming.
They've got a little. Hang on, I think people are starting to think we go to the pub a lot. We better change this. So now they've gone with in the fair dinkum stakes. That doesn't mean anything.
No,
you may as well say in the shoe wearing sock stakes.
Yeah,
like what? What does that mean? The fair dinkum stakes. I don't set out to bag Benji, but.
But there's always a but.
I'm not racist, but. Like, you're supposedly a journalist. How can you put that together as a sentence that you've uttered, thinking that that somehow makes sense? In the fair dinkum stakes, I don't set out to bag Benji, but.
Well, look, there is no way on God's earth, even if you look at how last season finished for the Tigers, and there was talk that Benji had been doing a lot of, if not most of the coaching, and took over from Sheens, but Sheens was still there in some capacity, which is crazy when you think about it. But there is no way you can judge what type of coach Benji Marshall is, even going by that small sample size. Like, we have to see how he goes over the course of this season, basically. And even then, like, look at what he's working with.
Yeah.
Like, what is the standard that Benji Marshall has to hit as a coach this year for it to be a pass mark? Because it's not going to be a great season for the Tigers. It just isn't. There's no way it's going to happen. But if they're, like, if they finish 15th, like, if they're not getting thrashed by 60 points, you know, over four of their last five games, it'll be a pretty good turnaround. Like, that's the pass mark.
If he can get the team to stop being flogged like that, I'm not even talking about wins here at the moment. This club is not going to go anywhere on a long-term basis if it can't fix its defense. Its defense has been dog shit since day one. And the only times they've had success is when their attack was insanely off the fucking chart. And it was so much better than their shit defense. It made up for it. But it's... That's happened three times in 20 years.
Yeah.
25 years, you know. It's not the best way to go. It just doesn't work. They need to get their defense in order. So if he can get the average points conceded per game down to lower than what they've done over the last three or four seasons and stop those absolute thrashings.
Yeah.
To me, I don't care what the number of wins or losses are. If he can get that sorted out, that's the big step in the right direction to long-term success.
If they can have any sort, like absolutely any sort of consistency, if they lose four games in a row, but it's like the other, it's like 24 points to 18 or 24 points to 16. Like that type of consistency, that would be great. That would be a huge step forward, because the way that their results normally are, they, you know, you watch a West Tigers game, especially last year and the year before that and the year before that. Like, you sit down and you're like, I wonder if this will be the game I see a team score 80.
Yeah.
You know, and it not be ridiculous.
That's right.
So that's it. So his pass mark is, it's not hugely high, but the work to get there is huge.
Yeah, he's got a lot of stuff that needs to be sorted out. And as I said, like, I think the club would be mad if in the next two seasons it's looking at the position on the ladder.
Yeah.
I think they need to be looking at this year, it's got to be defense, get that defensive record sorted out. And next year, it's got to be about trying to get twice as many wins as what they had in their last wooden spoon season. So, you know, next year, they should be aiming to get minimum 8 wins. And I know we're not talking anything flashy, but when you consider this club has been, they should have had a clean out and a complete overhaul conservatively 15 years ago, and they're only doing it now. What they're doing, what they're embarking on at the moment is a 100% complete cultural overhaul in everything they do and everywhere they've thought about themselves and everything they run themselves and how they do everything. They're going to change everything. And so that means if you're going to make it work, it does mean baby steps.
Yeah.
But if anyone's sitting there thinking, okay, we've got to try and make sure we get to the top 8 this year, you're going, just stop.
Yeah, it's silly.
Just stop. You've got to get your defense right. We've seen this. When was the last team that won the premiership with absolutely atrocious defense? I reckon if it's not the West Tigers in 2005, you're probably going to go back to when the Bulldogs won in, I think it was 1980. Their points difference that year was less than 50, I think, from memory.
Well, like when it comes down to it, it's even if you're a really, really bad attacking side, if you're a good defensive team, you're a very difficult team to beat. Like there's no team has ever gone into a year and they've said, ah, man, we were just a bit too good defensively, you know. So no team has ever done that. So,
well, furthermore, yeah. I mean, most of the good defensive sides end up in the finals too.
Yeah, they do.
But not the majority of the good attacking sides.
No, they don't. And, you know, and the West Tigers have had bad attack and bad defense. So
yeah,
they start
even in the years when Benji was playing and they had good attack, still didn't make the finals.
True. They start their season proper against the best team for them to start against, the Canberra Raiders.
Yeah.
Canberra's full of beans. It'll be down there in Canberra. Oh, boy.
the West Tigers' record against Canberra in recent years, and I do mean years, is atrocious.
Yeah.
Utterly atrocious. Where is it here? I've got the bloody thing here somewhere. Here we go. The amount of absolute floggings that they've had has been insane. Let's have a look here. Just grabbing the stats.
Look, people come here because they know you're a statistician, so they don't mind waiting for you to bring up the stats.
That's right. Okay, look here. The last 15 games, the Tigers have won 2 of them.
Whoa.
The last one was in 2018, and they won that one 22-20.
Where was that at? Was that at Leichhardt?
That was at Bruce.
Okay.
And before that was round 22, 2015, which they won 20-18, also by 2 points, and that was also at Bruce Stadium.
Okay, that's interesting.
The losses? Mm-hmm. And we're going from round 25, 2014 here. 27-12, 30-22, 60-6, 52-10, 46-6, 48-12, 28-0, 20-12, 14-6, 30-12, 56-10, 2019, and 22-18.
Yeah, I don't think there's another team where it's like that so dramatically.
That means over those last 15 games, Canberra has scored an average of 32.7 points per game, and the Tigers have scored 12.4.
But to be fair, it's been an exciting 12.4.
For some of it. That's why this is a big game for the Tigers, because they need to start breaking some of these hoodoos, and they've got a lot of them because they've been losing a lot of games to a lot of teams for quite a while now.
Yeah.
But the one against Canberra is a big one because they just constantly capitulate to them.
We talk about the Panthers have ticked so many boxes in what you would want out of a champion team in recent years, and the West Tigers have crossed those boxes, unfortunately. Yeah. So we'll see what happens. They're going to have a long season ahead of them, but yeah, to judge Benji Marshall now on coaching is absolute insanity. And nobody that was that had any idea about football would do that.
Well, that's right. That's right. At least give him a game.
One official game would be good.
No one else is out there criticising Benji Marshall at the moment because, A, they've got a brain, and B, he hasn't played anything. He hasn't coached anything yet.
Yeah.
How can you criticise a bloke? And so this is what I was getting at before, is it shows you how frustrated they are, the media are, that they're not getting any leaks out of the West Tigers anymore. So we'll go and attack them instead. Because that's what they do. They're petty, little, whiny shitheads.
And look, they do it with everyone.
Absolutely they do.
Yeah. You look at all the attacks that even the Panthers have had to – they're arrogant. They celebrate too much.
Absolutely.
They listen to music. So many silly things. I mean, just the other week they were with the whole Spencer Lenu thing, and they were saying, he's a former Panther. And then the Panthers had one of their fans yelling racial abuse at a game, and it was like that wasn't what happened. It was actually a Roosters fan that was doing that at a Panthers game. And
It was in Penrith then.
Yeah, it was in Penrith, but it wasn't a Panthers fan, you know. So
we're talking about a culture here. It was in Penrith.
Yeah.
I know the person might have come from Bondi and they might have supported the Roosters, but the incident happened in Penrith, which is notorious because one person did it once as a visitor to the area.
Yeah.
So that's why Spencer Lenu did it.
They're terrible. They're terrible.
Okay. Can we also say Spencer Lenu did have his court case? His court case, his trip to the tribunal over his racial matters.
Yeah, and he got 8 weeks for it.
He did. It was interesting. Scott Bailey reported that the NRL lawyer has begun by stating that Lenu has played for Tonga and referred to him as Spencer Luai multiple times.
Yeah.
Lenu played for Samoa, not Tonga, so he's clearly got it mixed up with Jerome Luai. So it would have been pretty... probably a bit alarming for Jerome Luai. He might have been sitting at home watching a bit of TV, probably watching maths, and then gets a phone call saying, oh, you've been suspended for 8 weeks. He's going, what the fuck?
Would that be – that wouldn't even make the top three weird attacks on Jerome Luai, hey? It's like
– But the fact that he got suspended for that or that I said he was at home watching maths?
In terms of like, hey, Jerome, you got suspended for some Spencer Lenu said in a game in Las Vegas, it'd be like, what the fuck, man?
Oh, you said fuck. We're going to have to give you another week for that.
I thought eight weeks. I said before the judiciary hearing that I wasn't sure what the appropriate amount of time was to suspend a player for what he said. But the NRL's come down with 8 weeks, and like I hear that, and I'm like, yeah, that's fine.
I'm 100% fine with it. I think that if you want to start being legitimately serious and not just being, quotation marks, woke, right? If you would really want to stamp out racism, and you should be, because there's no place for it, it's fucking stupid.
Yeah.
Then when something like this happens, you need to have zero tolerance. So you go up to him, you say, if you're going to carry on like that, then. Yeah, you're not going to play footy for 2 months. Are you going to do it again?
Nah. I mean, 2 months is enough of a season where it's a real big deterrent.
Yeah, that's a third of your years gone.
Yeah.
I wonder how smart he's feeling now for saying that stupid shit.
Yeah. It was interesting the way that some of the coverage has been. I mean, at one point during last week before the hearing, there were reports coming out saying that Spencer himself had racial things said towards him in the game and that he wasn't willing to come out and say anything about it. I don't know how real that is. I tend to think it's a lot of the noise that the media was just creating to try and get clickbait, you know, headlines. But I'm just glad that that's a whack of a suspension. And you know, the next person that says something, and there will be somebody that says something racial, there's always an idiot waiting to open their mouth at the wrong time.
There is. The way this should work is the next person who does it, they get 2 weeks more than what Spencer got. And we just keep going until, you know, someone gets suspended for a whole year for it. Someone's going to eventually learn that you can't be doing this garbage anymore. It's pointless.
Is that the longest suspension for racial abuse ever? It
probably is.
It's got to be, right?
Yeah. I think this had 6 weeks in the past. I don't think it's got to 8 before.
Yeah.
So, no, I'm fully on board with the NRL here. I'd also like to know, actually, not know. I'd actually like it if they said, right, because of what you said and the way you behaved and it's of a racial tone, we're going to suspend you for 8 weeks.
Mm.
We also want you to be, every time you're seen on TV and you're going to do a media thing anywhere, we want you to wear a shirt that says, I'm a stupid fucking moron. Ask me why.
What, a Roosters jersey?
Same thing.
Well, the Roosters put out a statement saying that they were going to put their entire club through a racial sensitivity course in the aftermath of this. And, you know, that's not the worst thing in the world. I guess, why not? You know, it's not going
to
hurt anyone.
How stupid is it that you need to go through a course to learn not to be racist?
I agree. Like, I think it's crazy that there has to be courses like that. Like,
I know, it's nuts, especially with a game. But nearly every single sport has different cultures and races in it. Doesn't matter which one. We can joke about whatever we want, but to be honest, every sport's got different races and different cultures in there, and they've been there for decades.
Mm.
Just shut your fucking mouth and play the game. That's what you paid for. You're not paid to go out there and degrade people because of, you know, how they were born, which they had no choice over. Racism is just a stupid fucking thing. It really pisses me off, to be honest. I find zero purpose in it. I find it to be just completely, like, one of the dumbest things you could probably ever do in your life is to be racist. I don't get it.
Yeah, it's weird to me. I can't wrap my head around it. And like I've said, growing up in Mount Druitt, and man, I was lucky. And I thought it was normal to be surrounded by, you know, and have friends that were from everywhere. and I just thought,
as someone from rural New South Wales, no.
Yeah. I thought that's how everyone lived. And so I was like a really old adult when I found out that's not how everyone grew up. And so, yeah, when I don't focus on that when I look at people. And so when I see that sort of thing happening, it's like, this is really dumb. When I watch Ezra Man play footy, I'm not thinking about him being like Aboriginal or anything like that. It's like, that's Ezra Man. You know, I was clapping him in the grand final when he scored those three tries, especially the last couple. It was like, man, this is one of the greatest performances ever in a grand final. I'm not thinking of like any other crap like that. It's weird that people do, but I guess they do.
Yeah. It's mad.
Yeah.
There was also another thing that came out during the week, and that was the viewing audience in the US for the games over there.
Yeah.
And it came out, it was revealed 61,000 people in the US watched the game.
Mm-hmm. That's on Fox Sports.
That's right.
Over there.
Yeah. Which, after looking at the US population, and that is a percentage, it works out as 0.018%. of their population watch the game.
That's like five times the chance of dying of COVID.
Pretty much.
Remember COVID? That was fun.
Oh, they were good times. Good times. Yeah. So I thought it'd be interesting to see what 61,000 is as a population in Australia.
Okay.
And, well, I found out it would be the third largest population in Tasmania for a township.
Wow. Only the third, hey?
Well, I mean, there's only three places there, so, you know.
Yeah.
It would fit in at 27th on the list for most populated places in Australia.
Okay, that's interesting.
But it is ahead of Tamworth.
How many people did Tamworth have?
It's 34th on the list at 44,947.
Oh, those poor bastards.
It's a lot.
That's a lot of people that just need to get the fuck out of there, let me tell you.
It really is. Wagga Wagga's at 28th, 57,000.
Never been there.
I was once, apparently. it's been a few times more than that. Harvey Bay is...
Were you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I graced them with my presence very early on.
Do you know, this is an interesting thing. There was one time in my life, because I was born at Nepean Hospital, which is at kind of between Kingswood and Penrith, but it's like, it's basically Penrith. And I remember one time I was living on a street and it occurred to me that in my entire lifetime, I basically had moved 500 meters down the road from the hospital. And I didn't know how I felt about that.
Can I just say, that's very English of you.
I know, it was really weird. And like, it just occurred to me one day, I don't even know how. And I was like, wait a minute, I just was born there and I've made it to here in all these years. And like, I really liked where I lived at the time too, because it wasn't that far from the stadium. I could walk to the stadium. But at the same time, it kind of felt a bit sad as well.
You know what's amazing is the fact that my first night at home after being born,
yeah,
was about 80 k's away from the hospital.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Oh, that's good. But yeah, it would have the 61,000 would have slotted in at 27th, pushing Harvey Bay down because they're at 59,000. Coffs Harbour's at 26 was 75. So that's kind of what the population was that watched the game in the US out of their 331 million.
Hopefully,
bit of work to do.
Hopefully it grows, yeah. Yeah, we'll see. That's why they're doing it. You know, you got to start somewhere.
Yes.
So, yeah.
But I think if they're going to be legitimately serious about this, is it can't just be we go over there and it's a flash in the pan thing for round one every year. But we need to be doing stuff throughout the year and keep going back and keep reminding them, hey, we're not going away. It's not a flash in the pan thing. We're coming back. We're still here. We're coming back.
Yeah, well, like the beauty of the US market is that it's so huge that you could have, say, four events over the course of the season where, like, you might have two games in Las Vegas, two games in LA, two games in Dallas, like we talked about, because it's got that direct flight. And then, I don't know, two more games somewhere else.
Why don't they take Magic Weekend over there?
I think that these games in Las Vegas are going to be like a second Magic Weekend, especially next year. Because I think because everyone was so excited about the first two games in Las Vegas and how well it went, I think next year we're going to get a huge traveling group of fans that do go over. And you might find that people choose between going to Las Vegas and going to Magic Weekend. I don't know that taking the whole round of games there is the best thing for footy in Australia, because like there are like, what do we get for an average round? Say it's 100 to 120,000 that attend a whole round of football in the NRL. You know, not allowing all of those people to attend an NRL match for a round, I think that would hurt the league, but I think that having two games is all right.
Or maybe take some international games over there. Because I just had a brilliant idea.
Yeah.
Do you know which place in the US is regarded as being pretty much the geographical dead center of the USA?
Let me think.
This is one of those random pieces of information that I actually do know.
Okay. So I know St. Louis is considered the gateway to the West, but St. Louis isn't the geographical center. I don't know. Would it be Oklahoma?
It's in Kansas.
Kansas, all right.
and the name of the township that it's located in is called Lebanon.
Oh, really? That's interesting. Yeah.
So how's about we take a Lebanon international game there? Lebanon can play against the USA and Kansas.
We could do that.
And they can call it a home game for the Lebanon because it is.
Considering that we had a Pacific Championship final played in New Zealand between Australia and New Zealand and five people attended it.
Yeah.
I would not put anything in the hands of the International Rugby League to attract any sort of crowd to an international game.
No, it would be done by the Lebanon Rugby League Federation.
I would put more faith in them. I would put way more faith in the Lebanese Rugby League.
Yeah. Robbie Farah can organise it.
Yeah.
Yeah. He'd be fine.
Do you know, I have done more research. You know, people probably don't understand how big of a couple of rugby league geeks me and Andrew are in terms of, like, where we'll finish this podcast sometimes and all of a sudden we're looking up random footballers in the 80s that played like 10 games but really so involved in it and so committed to finding these sorts of players and stuff like that. I have done a ridiculous amount of research on the best grounds to play rugby league at in the United States, taking in college football fields and not the big ones, because the thing people normally do is they'll go, oh, let's just go to NFL stadiums. No. I've looked at like Major League Soccer grounds. I've looked at lower league grounds. I've looked at former baseball stadiums that have been converted. I have looked at all sorts of stadiums. I've spent too much time doing it.
Have you come to a conclusion?
No. I'm still researching.
You're still edging us on that one.
I will say this, like the LA Galaxy's ground looks like a good one. That's one place that I'll definitely focus on to play games at.
I think the one thing you'd probably struggle with is trying to find a venue that is big enough for, you know, the field to be measured out in metric.
yeah. Well, a lot of the NFL grounds, like, they're very, very tight dimensions because some of the places that it is, they have built this ground just to have the gridiron size field on. So you just will never be able to even get any sort of, you know, rugby league played on it. But
it's not too much different either to the English soccer grounds, the ones that are specifically for soccer, because they don't have this big area required after the goal line for the in goal.
Mm.
That's why whenever we take rugby league games to those legit soccer venues, the in goal pretty much is like 35 centimetres from the fence.
Yeah, and they're super dangerous. And we shouldn't be taking those games. You may have talked about that before. We shouldn't take games to dangerous venues.
No.
I take that into account. I like to see the field marked out with the full soccer field if I can. And I look at the runoff areas. So, like, and, man, I have done that all over the US. Because I've always felt like it's very easy to put points on the map in for major cities. But there are a lot of smaller cities in the US that have big populations that don't have professional sporting teams, that do have college teams and stuff like that, that you'd have to break through those barriers, but that you could probably make an impact in those smaller cities better than you could, say, LA, where I don't care what you can play a Lakers game in LA. The whole of LA isn't focused on the Lakers at that moment. Like, it's just too big of a place. So I tell you, the other thing I have been doing a little bit of research on is the way that they hand out scholarships in college sports over in the US.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a rule where you've got to have the same number of scholarships for sport for females as you do for males. So you find that because college football is so huge, they will have all of these women's sports just to offset how many scholarships they've got to give out for their football team, their gridiron team.
Yep.
And it made me think about, like, if you started to try and push women's rugby league in US colleges, straight away you've got like 17 scholarships that they might be able to give to the football team, but they can offset that with the women's rugby league, stuff like that. I think that's the sort of thing we've got to sort of look at, different ways we can get the game going over there, but it can't just be from the way we see sport. It's got to be the way that the Americans see sport as well.
That's right. That's right. It's a hell of a challenge.
Yeah.
And you've got to try and get, I think the bigger challenge is trying to get Americans invested in a sport that's not theirs.
Yeah, they've got to feel like it's theirs in some way from the get-go. And I think the thing that they see when they say rugby league is the toughness of it and the impacts in the tackles and things like that, and then the athleticism of it. Like, you can't deny those things about rugby league, and, you know, it's a great sport to watch, and we'll find out. Like, but they need to commit more if they want to really crack that market. And I don't think you crack the whole US market. I think you crack a region and you try and do it that way.
Yeah, that's the only way to do it. If you try and capture the whole market, it's 300 million people you got to try and sell the game to. It's too big.
It's like trying to eat an elephant. Like, where do you start?
Yeah, I mean, ass, obviously, but yeah.
Straight for the ass, yeah.
you don't fuck around here. Teeth, straight there.
Yeah.
What else has been going on in the world of rugby league?
Not much else. It's been really quiet. Although I say that, I don't follow any of the mainstream media stuff, really. I only see the stuff that barely cracks through that I see on social media. And because I've got all of the things blocked. So I completely focus on the footy, and it's beautiful, because all I'm thinking about is the actual footy on the field. And, man, I'm so happy that the footy season's back. It's going to be cool to have the full round of games here. And, man, that Penrith versus Parramatta game, it's going to be interesting.
Should we have a look at the games coming up this week?
Yeah. Let's give our tips.
Let's do that. So we'll go with, because I've got a few stats for all the games as well, as always.
Yep.
So Broncos v Rabbitohs. We'll just go through the changes. Corey Oates, Xavier Willison, both into the side. Martin Taupau's moving to the bench. Corey Jensen's into the front row. So that's for Broncos. For South, Jai Arrow and Jacob Host are out. Talis Duncan and Shaq Mitchell, Michael Cheekham, Tani Milne, they all come into the side. Stats, what do we got here? Oh, yeah, got some good ones here. Souths have won 28 of their last 33 games in Queensland, including 8 of their last 9. That's over the last 5 years.
That's incredible. And
Brisbane have scored 28.4 points per game over their last 16 NRL matches, while Souths have conceded 27.9 points per game over their last 14 NRL matches.
Yeah, and that's why I'm leaning towards the Broncos.
Yeah.
Souths crack.
That's, they do. I really want to see Souths do well this year, but I'm finding it hard to be convinced that they can do that. I think they're just going to be kind of like, I think they'll be kind of like the Sharks were last year, where they built out big scores against the crappy sides and then struggle against the top sides.
Yeah, I think that if they have the season that I feel like they're going to have, and look, I've had them in my top six from memory. But, you know, that first round, you know.
Yeah.
It feels like it could go very wrong very quickly if they're not careful. They've got enough senior players that they should be able to sort that out. But I don't know. I mean, Demetrio's coaching, I don't know about it. And I think that I could see them having a rough season and him, like, I could see them finishing sixth and they still sack him, hey?
The thing I find interesting about him is I think his coaching style is not too different to that of Shane Flanagan. But for some reason, he's built a team that's more suited to attacking football.
Well, that's the thing. It's not – you look at it and you don't just look at what he's done. You look at that, the team they've put together. And I feel as though the team they've put together, it hasn't felt like focused buying, if that makes sense, you know. And I think that getting Jack Whiten is one of those things. I mean, if you ask most teams, do you want Jack Whiten playing in the centre sphere? They'd say, yeah, that'd be great. It doesn't mean that's the best idea to spend all that money on a dude that plays in the centres. They'll go all right this year, but I don't know that it's going to be enough for Demetrio to not be moved on just because they feel like they need a change of direction.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think the Broncos will win this one. Next one is the Sharks versus the Bulldogs. Kyle Iro comes into the bench. I'm hoping he starts. And who is it? Tuku Hautapua. He's under the bench as well. Royce Hunt moves to the bench, and Toby Rudolph moves into the front row for the Bulldogs. Connor Tracy's on the wing. Bronson Cherry under the bench. They're just putting former Sharks up in this game, basically. And Josh Adokar has been dropped.
No, he suffered a really bad shoulder injury. Yeah, I haven't heard what the injury was after the game. During the game, they said it was an AC injury, but I don't know if that's been confirmed as the only injury he's got. And I haven't heard how long he's out for.
Well, they've named him in the extended bench.
Oh, that's weird.
Yeah.
His shoulder was fucked. Yeah. Like, it looked really bad during that Parramatta game.
Well, it's okay. They can put Bronson Cherry on the wing because he's really fast. Do you know how fast Bronson Cherry is?
Enough that he wants to brag about it.
Stats-wise, the Sharks have won 11 of their last 13 games against the Bulldogs, and the Bulldogs' last win at PointsBet Stadium was in 2011.
Fuck.
I'm going the Sharks, probably a little bit too comfortably here.
Yeah, you can't go for the Bulldogs right now. By the way, how many losses before Phil Gould decides he wants to change the coach of his fantasy rugby league team?
By the time he decides that Sherrato's getting tired?
Yeah. Like, I'm talking in a row to start the season, how many would it take?
Five. I think after last year, I don't think he'll wait too long. I think he'll give him a month.
I think seven, and I say seven because I feel like he wouldn't want to show that he was wrong. Because this is his coach, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that he will go seven and then replace him because he would be like, I have to at this point.
At what stage? You know, how many losses into the season before he starts the huge PR campaign about how great a coach Serraldo is?
Like, what do you mean? Like, in terms of how many wins they would have?
No. Like, it would be probably three losses into the season, and then he'll start talking about how great a coach Serraldo is and how he's doing a lot of good things at the club and blah, 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 blah.
No chance I'm going to sack him, and then all of a sudden sack. I get you.
Full support of the board.
Yeah, I think you nailed it. Three.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because people were starting to ask questions at the end of the last season.
You people don't understand. I see what happens in the training sessions. You should see all of the differences he's made. I sacked him.
I just slipped him a few sleeping tablets and he was out. Gone.
We're fully committed to this guy. No, not the other guy. He's sacked now. Yeah. This fucking guy. Yeah. Who's going to be the next one, though?
We're fully committed to insert name here.
Yeah. I'm trying to think who would be his next. Who'd be the next dude?
Who's the current assistant coach of Penrith?
Yeah. That's funny.
Let's see. Stephen Kearney.
You reckon if he signed Stephen Kearney as the coach, I think Bulldogs fans would
riot.
Fucking riot, yeah. I think I would riot with Bulldogs fans. I think that would be the line in the sand for everyone in rugby league. I think Parramatta fans would be like, nah, that's too far.
I think they saw enough to get Mick Potter in there on a regular basis. I don't get how Mick Potter can't land a permanent job. He was the first coach to get the West Tigers defense looking somewhat useful, and then they fucking threw him under the bus. And he was doing the same thing at the Bulldogs when he got there. He fixed up their defense and made them competitive. He brought back that fighting spirit the Bulldogs were known for in the 80s. He brought that back as an interim coach, for fuck's sake. And then they threw him out. The bloke is possibly the most underrated coach there is, and he's never getting a genuine run.
I wonder if it's at some point for a dude, though, like him, where he can coach, but he went through a bad situation, and he's like, man, I do not want to do that again. I will step in, do 6 to 8 weeks of coaching if you need me to, but I'm not going to do that role again.
They have the perfect situation right now for him, where they put down on the paperwork that Cameron Serrato is the head coach. He does all the media stuff, all that sort of gear, but on the actual ground, it's all Potter. Serrato's just picking up fucking witches' hats and running fucking, you know, running drills and shit like that. Beep tests. That's all he's doing. And then he does all the media stuff and he fronts all that, and then just that way you keep Potter out of the limelight, and he looks like his assistant coach, but he's running everything. That would solve all of that. And they've got the perfect system there for all of that. That would work. And plus, it'd be really secret, so it'd be all really cool for Gus to go on about, we've got these secret things we're doing.
I was about to say, do you think that there would be any fucking secrets at a fucking team that Phil Gould's at? But as you said,
he would go around talking about. Yeah.
Yeah.
He wouldn't reveal them, but he would say that they're secrets.
Yeah. Remember when he was going to do that big reveal about concussion?
Yes. He said he got a researcher to do some investigating into concussions, and it was going to be was it really, really big news for the NRL? Would it open some eyes or some shit?
Yeah, and he was going to do it in the next couple of weeks, and that was about a year and a half ago.
Yeah, it came up again recently. He brought it up recently, like only two or three weeks ago. Oh, yeah, it's close, it's coming. Yeah, so Santa Claus.
Yeah, exactly.
Speaking of Gus, Penrith versus Parramatta. Luke Summerton's been replaced by Mitch Kenny coming back in.
Mm-hmm.
Scott Sorensen's back into the second row. Dane Laurie's on the bench. Maverick Guy's on the extended bench. Luke Garner, second row to the bench. Nothing major there. Parramatta. Ogden's on the bench, Greg's on the bench, and Offahen Gowie moves to the bench in the front row, and Junior Paulo moves into the front row from the bench. What have we got here stats-wise? Parramatta's won all of their last 4 regular season games against Penrith.
Mm-hmm.
Penrith's last win on Parramatta's current home ground was in round 11, 2019.
Wow, that's a long time ago.
Mm.
Have they not played there? Have they moved
their game? No, they've played a few games there.
That's interesting.
I think they've played 2 games there out of their last 4, and they lost both of those, and the other 2 games were at Penrith, which they also lost.
Okay.
The only games that Penrith hasn't lost to Parramatta in the last 3-4 years mm-hmm. have been games played in the finals.
Yeah, the games that matter, yeah.
Yeah. That's exactly right.
That's going to suck for Eels fans.
Yep. Yeah. So I'm going Penrith.
Look, Parramatta looked really good last week, but it was against a terrible team. You got to say that. But they looked on. It was very typical Parramatta. Starting the season and they look $1 million. Moses looked $1 million. Even with the groin injury, pulled his groin kicking for touch. And he decided to just withdraw in terms of his running game and his kicking game, but he guided them around the park really well. And it was great. He was great in that role. I'm a little surprised that he's going to be playing this week because a groin injury is not something you mess around with, but he might be one of those dudes where, you know, some dudes, you know, they can pull a muscle and they're fine. Like, you don't have to worry about him.
I think he's probably pulled his groin a fair bit over the years, and so it probably recovers pretty quickly from it now.
Yes.
That's a wanking joke.
Yes. I would make a wanking joke, Andrew. But
no, it is interesting, some of those, though, because sometimes it can just be a bit of a niggle and you just need like 2 days off doing any sort of cardio work, and it just comes good with rest.
Yeah.
So that's probably all they're going to do is just rest him up a little bit, not having doing too much of the kicking stuff in the first few days after the game. Probably rest his groin a bit, and he'd just be doing light stuff, probably doing lots of video and whatnot, resting up a little bit.
It would worry me in terms of, like, he's your halfback, it's round two. I understand it's a big game, especially for them against Penrith, the Premiers. I don't want to be worrying about his groin for the rest of the bloody season. I would rather just rest him. If he needed 2 weeks off to get 100%, I'd give him 2 weeks off. It's just one of those injuries where it can linger if it doesn't go away. But, you know, we'll see. I just hope it's not one of those injuries for him. But, I think it's going to be an interesting contest. Why would you tip against Penrith? Like, we've seen. We've seen what they do. I'm not going to tip against Penrith until they're terrible.
They're due to end that run.
What run?
The four straight losses in the regular season.
The regular season, yeah.
Yeah.
The thing about it, I guess, is that, and I've said this before on the podcast, I have always loved watching this particular Penrith team get tested to their absolute limits and see how they react to it. And, you know, if they started the season 0-2, it'd be an interesting response by them. Either way, they'd either step up or they'd not have the season we all expected them to. And I love seeing them in these extreme situations. It's really cool.
Oh, absolutely. Next, we've got the Raiders versus the Tigers. So I gave the one stat before about the recent streak. Also, 17 of the 21 games played between these sides at Canberra has seen the total number of points scored for the game hit 38 points at the minimum.
Oh, wow.
So it's probably going to be a high-scoring game.
Yeah.
Sebastian Chris comes into centre. Kyle Weeks is on the bench. And Nick Kotrick has moved to the bench from the wing. And Albert Hopewadi's moved from centre to the wing. The Tigers have got a few new faces there. Solomona Fatapi is at centre. Lachlan Galvin, Jaden Sullivan will be the halves. And John Bateman's still at second row. I don't know why. Aiden Caesar's on the bench. Why would you put a halfback on the bench?
Why would they do that? Yeah, that's weird. I don't know.
And Samuela Fine is on the bench. They don't have a big bench. And that's probably a little bit of a worry. Mm-hmm. It probably won't be. They might get away with it, given that it's dry and warm. So they might be hoping to sort of play more wider of the Raiders and try and wear them out a little bit and wear them down that way and try and win the game in the second half. Noble strategy. Noble strategy.
Brave.
See how it's going. The eternal optimist in me wants to pick the Tigers. Note the word wants. I'm picking Canberra in this one.
If the Raiders score less than 52 points, I'll be disappointed in them.
Yeah, I think you're going to be disappointed in them.
You reckon?
Yeah. I think they'll win, and they'll win fine. But it'll be kind of like, I guess that'll be similar to the Parramatta Bulldogs game last week.
Okay.
Yeah. Cowboys versus the Knights. This will be just the 12th time in their history that the Cowboys have started a match sitting in first place on the ladder. The last time was round 10, 2016.
Oh, that's an interesting one.
And the Cowboys have won 14 of their last 21 games against the Knights.
Yeah, I just think the Cowboys are a bit more of a well-rounded team. Like, I feel like these teams are similar in some ways, but the Cowboys are a better quality version of these two teams, if that makes sense. They're trying to build towards something and they're not quite there yet, but the Cowboys are further along and probably have a few more quality players. The only thing that worries me is the Cowboys' defense early in the last game, in the last round. Early on, it looked really, really soft. And we saw a little bit of that last year out of the Cowboys. We talked a little bit about them not having those toilers in the back row. They're all kind of similar sort of big bustling forwards that they've got, and they probably need a few more toilers in the back row. But, yeah, I'm leaning towards the Cowboys. I think they've got too many quality players across the park for the Knights. And, look, if the Knights, you know, if they start the season 0-2, that'd be super disappointing for them.
It would. I, too, am going for the Cowboys. I am going to try my awful hardest to see this game because I do have wraps on the Englishman that the Knights have brought in Kai Pierce-Paul. Fairly young second rower, but very skillful, more so than John Bateman. So I want to check him out. I want to see some more game time. I haven't seen a huge amount of him.
The Knights scouting of the English players they have got has been pretty good in terms of they look for a dude that a young guy, first of all, that hasn't been ruined yet, which happens at these Super League clubs. That happens. And they look for the frame and mobility.
Yeah.
And it's really basic athlete scouting. But they don't just buy everyone. They only buy those sorts of players. So, yeah, I liked the frame of him and his mobility. They're the things that stood out for me. And we'll see how he goes.
Absolutely. What's next? Storm versus the Warriors. Melbourne have won their last 14 straight games against the Warriors with an average score of 33-11.
Wow, it's weird because I always think of Storm versus Warriors as like, ooh, this could maybe be one of those games. And it's not. It just won't be.
No. The Warriors have won 15 of their last 50 games in Australia.
But yeah, that's bad.
For the Storm.
Hey, by the way, I'm an expert. That's how you know. Like, when I listen to those stats and I go, yeah, that's bad.
Yeah,
that's why I'm an expert.
Immediate judgment on the spot.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There's no thought process.
It just naturally happens.
It's just there. You just know this stuff.
Yeah.
So I work with you, man. Sean Blaw and Kane Bradley come onto the bench for the Storm. And for the Warriors, Adam Pompey, Jazz Tavanga are on the bench there as well. Not much changes there. Interesting that Channel Harris Tavita's on the extended bench and not starting yet. So I thought he might have started.
Yeah, like maybe he's just not ready yet after the year off. Halfback on the bench.
What role does Dylan Walker play in the modern game? I thought so.
Yeah. Like you could say, I could understand if it was experience, but he doesn't play like the sort of play. He's not like the sort of play that calms the team down when they're going off the rails. Or so. He just sort of plays footy, you know?
Yeah, he's like the typical West Tigers signing.
He really, you know what? He's a fucking West Tigers lock.
Yeah.
He's not a 5'8". He's not a center, which he was an all right center when he was a young bloke. He's that tweener sort of player.
Yeah, he's a poor man's Tyrone Peachy.
Yeah, it's a weird one. So I feel like the Warriors have already moved beyond having a player like him in their side.
Yeah, and they put him on the bench. Like, I just see that as a wasted bench spot. Like, put a forward there.
A forward, yeah, yeah.
That would just be so much. That would make the side so much stronger, in my view. But hard to go past the Storm here.
Yeah, yeah. You can't tip against the Storm, and how the Warriors bounced back from that really disappointing loss in the first round. They had a huge crowd. They started on fire, and it all just fell apart for them. You know, then they go to Melbourne. If the Storm whip them, it's going to be a real kick in the guts for them. And so I expect them to come out firing early in this one, but, you know, we'll see what happens. But, yeah, you can't go against the Storm.
Next one, Manly versus the Roosters. I've got a stat here about Fortress Brookie.
Okay.
Manly have won 24 of their last 51 games there.
So it's not really...
not quite a fortress. It's more like a jumping castle. the Roosters have won 5 of their last 8 games against Manly at Brookvale. So...
I'm going for the Roosters. I've talked about it. I don't think the Roosters are as good as people say, but... I also think Manly is not real good this year.
There's a few changes for both. Jason Saab's obviously out. Tommy Talau comes onto the wing for him. So, you know, they've added a bit more West Tigers to flavour to the side, so that's always a good thing. Aaron Woods is on the extended bench. You know, you got to bulk that up a little bit more.
Yeah.
Jacob Arthur's on the bench. For the Roosters, Spencer Lenu's out, as is Spencer Luai. Coming into the side, Dominic Young, Jabariah Hargraves, Connell Watson. So they've bulked their side up a fair bit. I'm going with the Roosters.
Yeah, I just don't like the look of Manly this year at all.
Yeah. Luke Brooks doesn't go well against the Roosters.
Who does he go well against?
That's a good question. Probably the West Tigers. He's been handing the West Tigers losses for years.
When he plays against the West Tigers, like if he has even slightly a good game, the media is going to go nuts.
Okay. I made that stat just then without looking at the numbers. I just had a look here, and his record against the Roosters. 13 games, 1 win, 1 draw, 11 losses.
Wow, that is not good.
That's his worst record against any team.
Really?
Yeah.
Was he one of the ones that... Oh, no, it was the West Tigers.
He's got a bad record against most clubs, but he's got at least 3 wins against every other team, including the Storm, but only 1 win against the Roosters.
That's so strange.
Yeah. So, Roosters for that one. And for the final game of the round, Dolphins versus the Dragons.
Everyone take their peptides now.
The Dragons have won the opening 2 rounds of the season just 3 times, 2010, 2014, and 2018. And the Dragons have won just 14 of their last 52 trips to Queensland. That's going back to 2009.
Wow.
I don't know. I'm going to pick Dolphins because I don't know. I don't think I can ever say I'm picking a shamefully can coach side ever again in my life.
Yeah, it's, I mean...
not very professional. Not very expert of me. But, I'll die on that hill. I'm fine with that.
Luciano Leilua has been named on the interchange bench for the Dragons. So he'll add something to their pack. He is a good player, you know.
He is. Off topic slightly, his brother got his ass handed to him tonight in a celebrity boxing match against Connor Tracy. Whatever his name was. Not Connor Tracy.
Connor Watson?
No.
Connor McGregor?
Scott. That one that doesn't play rugby league anymore because he was a dickhead. Is it Connor Scott? I can't remember his name.
Anyway, some football.
It doesn't matter. He's a former Raiders player. He got into trouble. Remember that guy?
Talked about, what's his name?
Curtis Scott.
Yeah, Curtis Scott.
That's the one. Yeah.
Where was that held at?
Oh, I don't know. Some pub somewhere.
Fucking RSL club somewhere. Boxing, man. It's great. Yeah. It's like Jake Paul versus Mike Tyson. What do you think of that?
I mean, I hope Tyson absolutely feeds him one.
It is the weirdest shit. Like, I don't mind it. I don't mind the when it's real freak show shit. Like, but it's a 30-year age difference. Mike Tyson's like, what, 58, 57, 58? Yeah, it's crazy. I bet there's no drug testing for that one.
Let's hope not.
It's like in the old days of the Pride Fighting Championship where they would write on the contract, we do not test for steroids. That was the best shit. That's why it was amazing. Not that I endorse steroid use at all. It just makes sport awesome. Did you hear all of the people talking up Zach Lomax?
I didn't hear about talking him up. I heard a lot of people were wondering whether he was going to work out as a winger or not. And the answer is no, he's not.
Well, he's been named on the wing again.
Yeah.
The people were talking up and saying, oh, he's a man. It's like, can we fucking calm down a little bit? There was already a little bit of talk in the media that I think it was his manager, Zach Lomax's manager, wants to get him to Parramatta. And the Dragons said that they won't even talk about it until the end of the year, which is interesting. They should fucking bite. If Parramatta will take his whole contract, they should fucking drive him to Parramatta. Because I think he's on a fair whack of money at the Dragons.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me. I don't know why he'd put him. I don't know why he'd put him on the wing. But they're doing it because they want to put Jack Bird in as the centres.
Jack Bird's garbage too.
I just wouldn't have Jack Bird in the back line at all.
I wouldn't have Jack Bird in my side. I don't rate Jack Bird. I don't know if I've talked about that in the podcast. I don't rate him at all.
If there's anything I've learned is doesn't seem to hurt too much if you repeat what you've said before.
So what do you mean?
The amount of times I've said the same thing about the West Tigers.
All right.
So by all means, tell us about Jack Bird. Nah, look, he was his first few seasons when he was at the Sharks. He was very, very good at getting outside his defender when he was in attack. Defensively, not great, not atrocious. I mean, he wasn't Nofaluma, but you know. He held his own. He was okay. But the talks then were that he was going to move into the second row, and I thought, it's not a good idea. And there were suggestions that he wanted to become a fullback when he was at the Sharks. And the fact they said, yeah, mate, that ain't happening. And that was part of the reason why he left, apparently. Mm-hmm. He wanted to have more of a playmaking role. That's where he thought he belonged. And I think he might have lasted less than a handful of games that the Dragons doing that stuff, and they went, yeah, you're going in the second row, mate. And now they've decided, and this is the thing that I think you shouldn't do. It should be a sin for coaches to do this. If you've got a bloke who started his career in the forwards, in the backs, and you move him into the forwards, never move him back.
Yeah.
Right? You've moved him into a role that's slower for a reason. Right? If you move him back, he's going to be too slow out there. And more often than not, you find that as soon as you move a bloke who's gone from the centres to the second row and you're moving back to the centres, genuine centres get around him easy. Well, so don't move him back there.
Typically, when you move a dude from the centres into the back row, and it like the number of times it's been done successfully is surprisingly low.
Yes.
It's because, they've got the frame for it. That's the first thing. Mm-hmm. They're normally really big dudes. The second thing is that they've got a defensive mentality about them. They can get through the work and it doesn't damage them. It doesn't wear them down.
That's right.
And that's why there's very few do it. The number of players that have gone from the second row into the centers, like full-time center role, is low as well.
Yes.
And it's at best, it's normally a second rower that can handle it. And I think of someone like a Capewell, like he can do that. But it's not like you look at Capewell when he has played in the centres and say, oh, wow, he's a genuine centre. It's like, no, this is a stopgap measure.
Exactly.
So, yeah, I agree with you 100%.
I tell you one thing, I was going to say, the other thing that's stupid about this, okay, is the fact that the most productive attacking weapon that the Dragons have had over the last 3 years, and not that they've had any, has been the combination of Sloan at fullback, Lomax at centre, with Ravalara outside him. And they've completely moved all of that around. They've now got Lomax and Ravalara on the wings. So they've taken away their strongest attacking weapon, which was that little corridor down the right-hand side.
Yeah.
They don't have it anymore.
I tell you what,
Ravalara... Why would you weaken your attack when you don't have much attack to start with? You know, that's what I don't get.
Yeah, I don't understand it. Ravalara is one of the very few Dragons players that have... Like, it doesn't matter how they're going, he's going to do some shit for you.
Yeah.
And, like, Sully, he is amazing. He was great last year. I loved watching him last year. And he started this season well, too. It's cool to see those two players kicking ass.
Absolutely.
Also, Kyle Flanagan's there.
Can't go wrong, can you? Yeah, I'm going Dolphins. How about you?
Oh, man, I mean, the Dolphins were so bad last week. But Bennett is there.
Jake Avarillo's coming in the centre. Katoa's coming in halfback. Ewan Aiken to the second row. Jared Wallace is on the bench. Kurt Donohue onto the bench. And Tessie Nuo's out of the side. Shuno Sullivan's been moved from halfback to bench.
And that's what worries me. That's a fucking lot of changes. And it's round two.
It is. I think the only thing that works for me, though, is the fact that the people they're bringing in were people who were kind of regulars in the NRL and for the Dolphins last year. So it doesn't kind of hurt them too much.
I'll go Dolphins, but I don't have much more time for them if they lose this game. I haven't got much more time for them this year because I was just so disappointed by that round one loss.
Yeah.
I feel like they needed to start the season really well.
Yeah, and they didn't.
They didn't, and I was really disappointed by it.
Now, I've got an article about the fight between Curtis Scott and Joey Lailua.
Yeah.
What do you think the weight difference was between the two fighters?
Well, do you have their actual weights? I'll guess them.
I don't have their actual weights. I've only got a thing that says what the difference in weight was between the two.
Oh, man. I'm going to say Joey Lailua. Oh, I'm going to say 23 kilos.
Oh. You're close and you're under. It was 28.
Fuck. Holy shit.
Oh, man. Now, after the fight, apparently Curtis Scott wants to take on Barry Hall.
Oh, God. So dumb.
Oh, Australian boxing is going from strength to strength.
Did you see during the week that I don't even want to bring it up. I don't even want to talk about him because that's what he wants. But Anthony Mundine started attacking Latrell Mitchell. Did you see that?
No.
Through Instagram and... He was saying, like, Anthony Mundine was saying how he was the first guy to bring up, you know, about racism in rugby league and all this shit. And just the whole, you know, the whole pantomime thing that he does.
Yeah, he wasn't, though.
No. Like, Anthony Mundine only ever promoted himself. And he only ever, some of his attacks were for, you know, fellow Aboriginal players, you know. Talked about Laurie Daly running on no legs and all this shit. And it just was really fucking off. I felt it was really off. And Latrell Mitchell, to his credit, basically brushed it aside and didn't want to give it any air. But I just thought it was it was not a good look for Anthony Mundine, I didn't think.
Well, you know, when you got no reputation left to damage... it's basically just a it's open slather, really, isn't it?
It's just, it was so weird. And once again, like, I'm thinking, poor old Latrell Mitchell. This poor guy can't do anything without someone having to go at him, hey?
And you think, you know, a lot of the things, I mean, most of the stuff he's been standing up for has been about the racism that's been directed his way. Not just from people and fans, but also, you know, the thinly veiled racism that comes from the media as well.
Mm.
You would have thought of all the people to be behind him on this crusade was someone who went through a similar thing in Anthony Mundine. And instead he's going, no, I'm going to pick at him.
Yeah, it's just absolutely crazy. Absolutely crazy. But I don't know. When I saw it, I was like, oh, this is so off. And once again, I just felt sorry for Latrell Mitchell because a poor bugger, he must feel like every time he opens his mouth or does anything, he's just going to get a barrage of criticism from somebody. And like, it'd suck. It'd suck to be in that situation.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I love Latrell Mitchell. I love watching him play footy.
Me too.
It's just amazing to see when he's at his best. It's just like, whoa.
It's been phenomenal to be able to go from Greg Inglis directly to Latrell Mitchell.
Yeah, yeah. To two just giant dudes like that are bigger than you think they are and that they can move the way they do. And like, I mean, make to it even look be,
easy.
Yeah, yeah. And like to even be, and the thing is too, like to have the ability to beat you with pace, but then just pure power as well, if they want to. And like, I mean, can you imagine anybody even mentioning your name in the same breath as Greg Inglis as a player? Like that'd be enough for me. It's like, the more I think of Greg Inglis, the more I think, man, that guy's going to be an immortal pretty soon.
Yeah. It's pretty, very, very special types of athletes. You don't get to see them very often. So to get two of them come along at around the same time, we're very lucky. And have the media shitting on them, especially on Latrell.
Mm.
Very disappointing. Very short-sighted of them too. But, you know, what do you expect?
Yeah.
So. Anything else we need to mention in this episode?
No, I think that's about it. It's been a good episode.
Smashed it out.
Yeah. What game are you looking forward to watching the most this weekend? Like, I know you said you wanted to catch some of the Sharks game.
I want to see how the Sharks go in their match because I need to see that they still have their attack against the weaker sides. Because regardless, if you see yourself as one of the top five or six teams in the comp, you need to put away those teams that are weaker.
Mm-hmm.
So the Sharks have been able to do that in the past. So I kind of don't really want to see them rack up a cricket score. I want to see that their defensive structures stay intact. Because if their defense stays good against the strong teams and the weak teams, that's a good sign that they're going to be going places.
Yeah.
I want to see the Tigers have some commitment in defense. I want to see the Panthers and the Warriors bounce back, see what that looks like as well. And I want to see Kai Pierce-Paul play. So I'm going to try and make that effort this time. I didn't get a chance to see much of the footy last weekend, so I'm going to try and make a bit more effort this time around, check that out as well.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, I've got, like, you know, the Formula One's on this weekend as well down here.
Do you know what I realised? I'm out in the Formula One this year. I'm completely out.
Well, I mean, it's all already over. Verstappen's won.
Yeah, like, between that and how long the season is, and I'm just like, I don't give a fuck.
That is 100% fair. And the first two races have been pretty, pretty tame.
Have they?
Well, we got to see Lance Stroll smash into a wall, so that's always fun to see.
Mm-hmm.
He smashed into the wall and went onto the car was undrivable. I think the front suspension was completely stuffed and snapped and whatever else. And team radio come up and says, can you drive the car back? And he goes, I'm in the wall. Yeah, trolling Lance. But yeah, it's looking pretty much just a continuation of last year.
Just some news that broke today.
Hmm?
Isaac Tungor re-signed with the Panthers. through to, I believe, the end of 2028.
Wow.
So, yeah, so that's a huge commitment to him. And I understand why. He's amazing. He's such an amazing player. And it was interesting to see May last week against the Storm for the Panthers in the centres. People realised what I've been saying about this dude for a while, is that this guy is a beast. He could be a very, very good player. He showed glimpses of that against the Storm. I believe he's off contract at the end of the year, so it'll be interesting to see if he stays at Penrith or if somebody else, Canterbury, pays him huge overs to sign for them. But
Panthers will keep him.
I tend to lean towards them keeping him as well, because I just think it's the best place for him, and I think he'd probably know that. But yeah, he's got the ability to be an absolute beast of a centre. And a game breaker, and he showed a little bit of that against the Storm, and he's only going to get better. He's coming off that major knee injury from last year's trial matches. So, it was good to see him sort of arrive on the scene for everyone to see.
Yeah. No, it's going to be a good week of footy, I think.
Mm.
Plenty to check out.
Yeah.
And if you're interested in Formula One, you can watch Max Verstappen win Australia. There's that. All right, well, we'll wrap this one up. Thanks for tuning in, everyone. Make sure you check us out on all of the socials, and we'll catch us all in the next episode.